Good morning and welcome to Back to Business with Rob and Alan. I'm Rob Davidson, owner of Davidson Advertising. The sponsors of Back to Business are Tucson Window and Door, Alcorn Auto Plumbing, Steamy Concepts, WaterTech, Arizona Pest Control, and Alan Shoes. And the program is being paid for by Davidson Advertising and Alan Shoes. This is show number 40, and today is Saturday, February 6th, 2021.
And hello, my name is Alan McCloskey. My wife, Annette, and I own and operate Alan Shoes in Tucson. As hosts of this show, Rob and I are committed to serving you, our listening audience, with ideas, strategies, and techniques for building, marketing, or improving your business. We created this show to try and help the efforts of small business owners to recover from the pandemic, and through all of our shows, we've been discussing the latest news. On most shows, we interview leaders in the community that have shared with you their experience, their knowledge, and some have shared their stories of struggles and success.
Our guest today is Julie Burdick, owner of Burdick Residential Appraisals and the Green Monkey Boutique. She'll be with us a little later to talk about her businesses and what's going on there. So, Alan, we have a full day today.
We sure do. And before we get on with our show, I want to, call attention to the Super Bowl. You know, Super Bowl suites, Rob, are among the most coveted tickets in all of sports. Luxury boxes for tomorrow's Super Bowl currently range in price from $50,000 to $662,000 for a luxury box ticket, suite size, suite location. The average ticket in those suites can range in price, Rob, from $8,000 to $21,000. And a friend of mine, Rick Ravel from Texas, reached out to me this week and told me that he had a friend that had two tickets to the 2021 Super Bowl in Tampa, both box seats. He paid $21,000 for each. They come with a ride to and from the airport, lunch, dinner, and a $400 bar tab, and also a backstage pass to the winner's locker room. He didn't realize, though, when he bought them, it was going to be on the same day as his wedding, Rob.
Huh.
And so what happens is he's looking for someone to take his place. And it's at St. Paul's Church in Orlando at 3 p.m. Her name is Ashley. She's 5'4", about 115 pounds, and a great cook. She loves to fish and hunt. She'll be the one in the white dress.
Oh, wow, Alan. Sounds like a guy's a real football fan, huh?
I think so. But first, Rob, I also really wanted to pivot over to the PPP loans, which we've been talking about on this show forever, but some of our listeners might be interested in an update that has to do with the PPP loans and some potential bottlenecks occurring at the SBA. Rob, doesn't it seem unusual to you that we have some other than streamlined processes in the government going on?
It seems like deja vu all over again, Alan. But lenders say many small businesses applying for additional help under the government's coronavirus relief program are finding that their efforts are to combat fraud are throwing up obstacles to getting money they need to help stay afloat. Now the SBA, which runs the Paycheck Protection Program, says help is on the way. The issue is tied to flags the Small Business Administration placed on roughly 240,000 initial PPP recipients for everything from clerical errors to indications of possible wrongdoing. Those flags are blocking lenders' ability to move forward second loans for the borrowers after the program just reopened. If you've got your fraud mitigation hat on, that's not all bad, said Tony Wilkinson, chief executive of the National Association of Government Guaranteed Lenders Trade Group. But some of these businesses are hanging on by a thread, and some of them needed the money yesterday, said Mr. Wilkinson. The SBA says it's working to remove the roadblocks. It's holding a national call this next week to help participating PPP lenders understand how to resolve the flags. The agency also plans to issue additional guidance to lenders, and it's telling field offices how to help borrowers and lenders that experience the holdup with second-time applications. Once the flags are resolved, those applications will be given priority in the approval process. The PPP, which reopened to new and returning applicants after being closed since last August, provides forgivable loans to small businesses, self-employed workers, and others to help them weather the coronavirus pandemic. The loans are issued through lenders such as banks and credit unions and are backed by the SBA. So, if you're in the market for a PPP loan, you may have to wait a little while, Alan. Alan, I think you're on mute, and we also have another article here about the Small Business Administration, the way they're going to be working with these loans. Alan, I think we lost. Yeah. There you go. There
no,
you, go.
You didn't lose me. I finally got my technology back in line. But I just wanted to report that I've got a mixed bag of friends. Well, the friends are not a mixed bag, but they got a mixed bag of results from my friends in the shoe business. I have someone here that says she applied on the first day the loans were available on the second draw, and the next day it was in her account. Other people are telling me they're still waiting. I'm on the waiting list here, and I think that bottleneck is really affecting me. But there's also other challenges that have to occur, Rob, with even back to the first draw, don't you think? I mean, we need to sort of figure out what's going on here. Do you have another article about this subject?
I do, Alan. The American Institute of CPAs sent a letter to the Small Business Administration raising concerns about the challenges that small businesses are facing with the current PPP program. PPP loans are proven to be a critical lifeline for millions of small businesses and not-for-profits that struggle to stay open and retain employees. As close advisors and CEO, we appreciate the SBA's continued efforts to restore Main Street America's economies. However, there are significant operational system and communication challenges that must be quickly addressed for PPP to succeed as intended. Specifically, the AICPA letter outlines the following problems small businesses and the CPAs who advise them face in applying for the current round of funding for first and second draw PPP applications. Challenges with draw one and draw two applications being denied acceptance into the E-Trans system. AICPA's letter acknowledges the important additional checks that were put in place to address fraudulent applications. However, it adds these validation checks are causing tens of thousands of legitimate applications to be denied acceptance by the SBA. SBA processing and resolution delays for applications submitted into the program are slow. AICPA's letter also cites confusion over the more than 40 different error codes related to SBA E-Trans system validation checks. For example, one of the new requirements for Draw 2 sole proprietor applications is to use an EIN number instead of their Social Security number, even though many used their Social Security number with their original PPP application. This new requirement is causing the application to be declined, since once the acceptance validation checks is to confirm the same number in cases. For instance, the system appears to report errors, even in cases where the borrower used the same EIN on both applications. And the SBA capping PPP draw one and two loan amounts. AICPA is aware that the SBA's loan processing system has put in place a loan eligibility amount cap of $35,000 per employee for both draw one and draw two applications. Because this cap results in the SBA E-Trans system reducing the approved loan amounts back to lenders, AICPA urges the SBA to provide clear guidance related to these PPP loan caps that is widely communicated. Small businesses are confused when their loan amount is reduced with no explanation. So there's lots of problems, Alan, and they're going to have to clear them up. And they better clear them up quickly because people need this money pronto.
You know, I just saw this other article here that there's other fraud issues that have nothing to do with the PPP, have to do with this EIDL loan. There are, it's just amazing all the bureaucracy that's combining with probably, Rob, some people that are working from home that are working for the government. I've had some issues with the state government that I find that a lot of those are people are telecommuting. And I don't know about you, Rob, but I feel that there's some problems out there with some people that, you know, that really needed to work next to each other, and they were trying their best, and they're probably doing a fair job at working from home. But we got to all get together pretty soon and start to communicate with each other. I, for one, have had my team of executives that we, you know, in our company, and we started having phone calls with each other again and Zoom calls and trying to get on the same page and looking in each other's face in these Zoom calls. There's just, the government must be even worse, is what I'm saying, as a result of this telecommuting issue, and that's got to be combined with this.
Well, you know, there's just lots of problems up and down the line, Alan, and look at how the vaccination process is going if you've tried to get online and sign up for one of those. So it's going to take some time to get things straightened out, and hopefully they'll be straightened out quickly because, like I said, a lot of these businesses need this cash now, another couple of weeks, and they may not be around to get it.
You know, you have an article that you can pull up that's from the Journal of Accountancy, which is an online portal with some news for accountants, and they also had another article that maybe you might want to tell what their advice was.
Well, this is from the Journal of Accountancy, and the IRS requires corrected information returns for certain SBA loans. The IRS instructed lenders that have erroneously filed or furnished forms 1099 MISC, miscellaneous income, reporting certain payments on U.S. Small Business Administration subsidized loans as income of the borrower to file and furnish corrected forms. Under the Coronavirus Relief and Economic Security Act, the SBA is authorized to pay 6 months of principal, interest, and fees on covered SBA loans. The Consolidated Appropriations Act of 2021 provides that these payments are not includable in the borrower's gross income. In addition, if a lender has already furnished these forms that report these loan payments to borrowers either before or after December 27, 2020, the lender must furnish to the borrowers corrected forms. So, you know, there's going to be income issues here, Alan, as far as how this money is going to be counted, whether you have to put it on your income statements or whether or not. So you better talk to your CPA, and if you don't have one, you better find a good one, I think.
I think so. And we've been in a part of our series. We have somebody out there that we've talked to that's a pretty good CPA. And you and I each know additional ones. So if you need any help on that, please call Rob at 629-9555. We'll be sure to give you a reference. You're listening to Back to Business with Rob and Alan on KVOI 1030 AM, The Voice. If you know of a long-term business person that should be highlighted by us on our show, we'd love to feature them on the show and interview them, just like we're going to interview somebody just after our commercial break. So please come back and join us after our messages.
Welcome back to Back to Business with Rob and Alan. I'm Rob Davidson, owner of Davidson Advertising. The sponsors of Back to Business are Tucson Window and Door, Alcorn Auto Plumbing, Steamy Concepts, WaterTech, Arizona Pest Control, and Alan Shoes.
And I'm Alan McCloskey, owner of Alan Shoes.
Our guest today is Julie Burdick, owner of Burdick Residential Appraisers, and she opened the Green Monkey Boutique in the River Center at River and Craycroft over 10 years ago. After several businesses and restaurants moved out of the center, foot traffic had declined. Julie started looking for a new location, a tough proposition during a pandemic. She found that Plaza Palomino offered the best solution for both of her businesses. The Green Monkey Boutique in Tucson brings community the chance to reinvent, reuse, and recycle all their looks from funky trends to timeless classics. An upscale consignment boutique nestled in Tucson's scenic Plaza Palomino, the Green Monkey offers a current, stylish, and ever-changing, expertly curated selection of yesterday's, today's, and tomorrow's finest styles from top labels. They offer new and gently used styles in a boutique setting reminiscent of shopping your most fashionable friend's closet. Current trends and timeless looks for women of all ages in every style category that is friendly for everyone's budget. The Green Monkey offers women's clothing from casual to semi-formal, athletic apparel, shoes, bags, belts, and a stunning selection of jewelry that promises not one visit is the same. Julie, welcome to Back to Business. Thanks for being with us today.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for the opportunity. I appreciate it.
So first, let's talk about your move. How was it that you were able to move during a pandemic?
Well, we saw the traffic was declining in the center that we were at, and but we were still getting business, and I felt that we wanted to be at a location where there were other retail spaces that were still operating successfully, and we also wanted to be around restaurants. A couple of the restaurants had closed in the center that we were at, and foot traffic was going to be really important. So, and we were also looking for a place where the management was local, and had talked to several of the people here at Plaza Palomino, and they were very happy with the management company here and the trend that was taking place. So, I had been looking at a space that used to be the Jay Gilbert space over the last couple of years, which had been vacant, and got the opportunity to take a look at it. And as it turned out, it was just a perfect fit for our store and then my real estate company as well.
So you're running both businesses out of the same location?
Well, we're in the same location, but two separate spaces. So we have an office space and then the retail space.
And why don't you tell us a little bit about the Green Monkey? How you operate, and what you're looking for, and what you're offering your clients.
Well, we're trying to actually the business has changed a little bit since we've moved. It seems to be a little bit higher end. We're trying to we've only been open for about a month, so we're trying to determine what direction to take the store, but I think it's really showing us, you know, what we need to do. I think the two other stores that are in the center, La Contessa and Maya Palace, have higher end clientele, and we've been noticing that they've been shopping at the store too. So we're trying to support local and encouraging people at all the locally owned women's boutiques to send their clients to our store with their clothes, so they can go back and buy things at their locations too. So we're just trying to kind of figure out who we are here. But I think in the long run, it's going to be a good move for us, and the quality of our clothing and accessories are going to be better than they were before.
What other kind of issues? Go ahead, Alan.
I had some questions. I wondered about the topic of resale in Tucson. It seems to me that there are a lot of resale shops, and a lot of them are in the lower end stuff. It's not this fashion stuff. Are there other businesses like yours that's doing the resale up in the more fashionable or higher end stuff?
Buffalo Exchange has always doing a little bit of both, moderate to upper end, and then I believe Posh Boutique on Tangaverde is also doing higher end. I know we've lost a couple of competitors over the last year, so the market is, you know, kind of pretty limited, and that's one of the reasons I decided to continue with it, because I feel like we have a fairly good opportunity with people being a little bit more cautious with their spending habits. So I think we have a little niche that that we're, you know, filling right now. We're actually up like about 20-30% over last year already here. So that's a good, you know, indication for us that, you know, I think it was a good choice.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Is there something that our listeners should know about the cleanliness of your product or measures that you do?
Yes, for sure. We spray down our store every day when we come in. We have a sanitizing station at our cash registers. We have marks to separate people when they're purchasing things, so they're 6 feet away. Every time someone comes out of a fitting room, we spray it, we Lysol it, and our employees wash their hands and also have hand sanitizer at the register and wipe them every time they sell something or take any credit cards. And then we hang the clothes out after they've been tried on for a period of time, so that we just make sure that everything is out of it. Anything that might be in the clothes is gone.
Well, that's very good. And I was mostly worried about the clothing, but I think your measures of how your staff deals with your customers and the procedures you have is commendable. Your staff, have you had issues during the pandemic with staff absenteeism?
Yes.
Has that been an issue?
Yes, actually last year, right when it happened, we had one employee got very sick, and we closed the store for about 6 weeks. I wanted everybody to feel comfortable to come back. And then going through that, we're very aware of, you know, being safe. So it was, you know, a good learning experience. It was new to us all at that time. But now, you know, we know everybody has to wear a mask when they're in the store. Even if we're off hours, they wear a mask. We're very conscious of keeping everybody safe. That's really important to me, for sure.
You know, Rob's expertise is advertising. Did you have a question about advertising that you can
Yeah, I do.
Yes, Rob.
What kind of marketing are you doing for your business?
Not as much as we should be. We do Facebook, and we do email, and we do flyers. And the Plaza Palomino has a Merchants Association a web page that we participate in. So we're trying to kind of get a game plan since we've moved. Everything has changed a little bit, so that is something that we're going to put a little bit more of a focus on for sure.
Now, not only do you have to get customers to buy your goods, but you have to find people to bring their things to you, right?
Yes.
So you're kind of looking for two different individuals, I would assume.
Yes, exactly. We are.
How How does a consignment work? How do you?
We take in. We're pretty picky of what we do take in because we want it to be a unique place. But we give the consigners 40%. If it's over $250, the items, then they get 60%. And what we do is we keep the items for about 90 days, and after 90 days they can come pick it up, and if they don't, we do, we donate to local charities. We donate to Casas de los Niños, The Haven, the Humane Society. We've, you know, throughout the 10 years that I've had the business, we pick in, you know, different places to, donate the clothing, or we'll do a sale with it and then give them the money that we get from the, having the sale.
And do you carry just strictly women's ideas?
Yes, but there's a business out there for men's. We get asked all the time, someone needs to open a men's resale, because we definitely get asked about that all the time. Our store is not large enough for that, but there's a definite market. There's a good opportunity for somebody out there for that, for sure.
Yeah, it's interesting. Men are a different kind of shopper, though. I know I am for, you know, when I go to buy something, I go in, I'm in and out quickly, and I know women like to browse and look at things, and it's a little bit different experience, but it would be interesting to see if there was a need for men's resale. I would imagine it could be a very profitable thing.
Actually, in the center, I thought it would be a good place, too, you know, with us being here, too.
Yeah, your location is good.
I already have two jobs, so I would do it if I
You only have two, right? Only
yeah.
Two jobs. That's great. We, you know, all of us have a lot of different jobs, and one of the things we want to talk to you about in about a minute or two, Julie, is your other business, your appraisal real estate business, because we've got some interest in that. So if you'll stick with us for a few minutes, we've got the news break, and we'll be right back to you to talk about that.
All right. Thank you.
Catch us on the Internet at b2btucson.com. That's b-t-o-b-tucson.com. If you want to sponsor our show, please call Rob at Davidson Advertising at 629-9555. You're listening to Back to Business with Rob and Allen on KVOI, 1030 a.m. The Voice. In the next segment, we'll have our guests come back and join us, and we'll be right back after our commercial break and the news.
Welcome back to Business with Rob and Allen. I'm Rob Davidson, owner of Davidson Advertising. The sponsors of Back to Business are Tucson Window and Door, Al Coronado Plumbing, Steamy Concepts, WaterTech, Arizona Pest Control, and Allen Shoes.
And I'm Alan McCloskey. My wife and I own and operate Allen Shoes in Tucson, and we continue with our guest, who is Julie Burdick, owner of Burdick Residential Appraisals and the Green Monkey Boutique, and we've been talking about the boutique. And Julie, we might as well give a little plug to your other business. Can you tell us about that?
Well, I have a residential appraisal company. I've had it for about 30 years, and we're extremely busy right now because of the interest rates, and the housing market is doing great and keeps me very busy.
Well, I thought I'd ask you a few questions, if you don't mind, about that, because I think that it's of interest to some of our people, especially people that may need to refinance their house as a result of needing money for their business. But I'm concerned first about new buyers. So I know that we've had lots of inflation recently, and the prices of houses as the supply and demand has changed during the pandemic. I'm worried about someone buying a new house and maybe receiving a high appraisal and later on find out that they're underwater. Is that an aspect they should be concerned with?
It actually is, and we're seeing that a lot right now because of low inventory levels. There are multiple offers that are going on, and the lower priced homes are really being affected by it. But as appraisers, I've been doing it long enough to know we've been through it before. There's a cap to when we don't appraise just to hit a contract price. There's got to be sufficient data and comparable sales to support a price. So it is an issue right now, and it's we're being looked at real closely by the lenders, and who are making sure that we don't go back to where we were before. So we do try to protect the buyers for sure. My colleagues do as well. We talk about it a lot. We'll get a job that's got 10 offers on it, and by the time you get it, it's $20,000 above the list price of $200,000, and we know what's going to happen in the next 5 years or so, and I don't want to be a part of being reviewed by Fannie Mae and having to, you know, to go back and tell them why we did it.
Do you have a staff that works with you, or are you a lone wolf out there doing it by yourself in your
organization? Oh, no. I have a one gal's been with me for, I think, almost 20 years, and another part-time person. So, yeah, we've got a crew. We've got it down.
How long does it take to get an appraisal done now, Julie?
We're about 2 weeks out right now. We're turning away a lot of work because there's not enough appraisers right now, and I've worked for the same management companies for a long time, and they've kept me in business, so I'm trying to keep them in business. So I don't take any work from people that I haven't done work for before.
Are you finding a lot of rental properties are being sold now?
Yeah, we're doing a lot of rentals. I'm doing a lot of rentals right now. Yeah, yep. A lot of people are renting. There's very limited inventory levels with rentals now, too.
What about new home building? Is that starting to pick up again?
It is, and I don't do much of that. But yes, it is. I have a lot of new developments around town, but that's not really my specialty. But I know that they're really active.
Do you hold an MIA designation?
No, my husband does, but I don't. No, I'm just a certified appraiser.
Okay, great. Great. Alan, any more questions?
Yeah, I just wanted to say that we appreciate anyone that's trying as hard as you are to, you know, work both sides, both retail and the appraisal business, and you're certain to bring value to the community. So we appreciate you being on our show, and I just wanted to ask you if you had any bit of wisdom or advice for any of our listeners.
Well, I go for things. I don't, if I have an idea, I just jump into it. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work, but at least I tried. I just feel like it's a good opportunity at the time right now. It can be a great opportunity for people to get into our retail space because it's, the prices have come down so much. So if you have an idea, just, you know, go for it and try to limit, don't do a long-term lease, maybe to make sure that it takes off. But, it's a really good opportunity right now if you have the means to try to start something new.
Okay, so remind our listeners where your Green Monkey Boutique is so that we can make sure that they get there.
Well, we're at Plaza Palomino, which is at Swan and Fort Lowell Road. There's some great there's like four great restaurants there too, and additional retailers. And it's a really great location. A lot of stuff going on here. A lot of doctor's offices and a lot of businesses, and it's just a really really quaint and nice office space, or retail space.
We appreciate you being on our show today. Thank you for joining us, and we give everyone encouragement to go visit you at the Green Monkey Boutique. Thank you very much,
Thank
Julie.
You. Thank you. Thank
Julie,
you
for thanks for being with us. Take care and be well.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Hey, Alan, I just saw something. You know, I think we're in the wrong business, to be honest with you. Do you know how much the highest paid player in tomorrow's Super Bowl is going to be making?
No, how much?
$25 million a year. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers, Tom Brady, will be making $25 million a year. You know, he's 43 years old. He's probably the best quarterback that's ever played, and he's still playing at an unbelievably high level, but $25 million.
I don't think you and I really have a chance to compete against him for that pay, Rob. I'm trying to think of, like, yes, we're in the wrong business, but I didn't practice enough.
Well, and just take a look at our bodies, and you'll know that we wouldn't be able to play at that kind of a level. But my goodness, I
used to play football, but I was being pushed down a second into the play. They pushed me on the ground, and that happened so many times. I just never felt the need to really go out for the team.
Yeah. Well, we all chose our sports, but. I just thought that was interesting with the Super Bowl tomorrow. $25 million. Good luck, Tom.
I want to read something about the SBA that I found online. Phony farms tied to billions in SBA loan fraud shock, according to Tampa residents. So The farms are phony, but the fraud is real for several residents who had no idea their personal information was used as secure fast-track government loans meant for businesses struggling through the pandemic. James Shipley, who lives on a 14,000-square-foot waterside lot in North Tampa, Florida, was shocked to discover James Shipley Farms was supposedly located at his address and had received a $47,000 economic injury disaster loan. He was certainly shocked, and the other Tampa residents were equally surprised after finding out their names and addresses were attached to farms that government records indicate are peppered across the city. William Dreyer, 85 years old, has St. Augustine grass growing in his front yard and palm trees rising above his South Tampa home, but he has no crops. However, Dreyer Farms received a $9,900 loan, according to records. And while Dreyer acknowledges he has relatives who farm in New Jersey, he's a retired executive and no farm exists on his property. I've lived here nearly 50 years and never picked up a hoe, Dreyer says. I'm on a little plot, 100 by 100 here, no farm. The loans are administrated by the Small Business Administration and were created to help businesses blot red ink caused by the COVID-19 pandemic. And so the article goes on to talk about how much billions are involved in fraud. Rob, I think that it's just like anything else. Sometimes you may wake up and find someone has a lien on your property because they signed something. You may find out that someone took a credit card in your name. Now you may find out that someone took an SBA loan in your name or your business's name. We have to look everywhere. I don't know how we control all this. We have to spend half of our time, Rob, looking in the rearview mirror, don't we?
Absolutely, Alan. And that's one of the reasons why a lot of these SBA loans are being delayed, because of all these problems. But yeah, there's a lot of people out there trying to profit from our Social Security numbers, our business numbers. You got to be real careful, folks. Got to be real careful and check constantly. I know you do, Alan. I do also. Last thing you want to do is find out that somebody did this on your account.
It's just amazing, and I try my best to check it. You have to check your junk mailbox all the time and your email program. A lot of people forget to do that, and you might find out some things. Yesterday there was a notice of some renewal in mine on some program that we're supposedly paid for, and on Monday morning I need to check. Did we actually pay for that? Was it charged to our account? I mean, every day it's a different issue.
Absolutely.
Catch us on the Internet. Catch us on the Internet at b2btucson.com. That's b-t-o-b-tucson.com. If you want to sponsor our show, please call Rob at Davidson Advertising at 629-9555. You're listening to Back to Business with Rob and Alan on KVOI, 1030 a.m., The Voice. In a few minutes, we'll be back after our commercial break.
Welcome back to Business with Rob and Alan. I'm Rob Davidson, owner of Davidson Advertising. The sponsors of Back to Business are Tucson Window and Door, Al Coronado Plumbing, Steamy Concepts, WaterTech, Arizona Pest Control, and Alan Chews.
And I'm Alan McCloskey. I'm with my wife Annette and I own and operate Alan Chews in Tucson. And my daughter has suggested to me that we start our show by reading some good news. So here's a couple of good news articles. I mean, let's start the segment, that is, not the show. But here is some good news articles I found online. Salmon spawning for the first time in 80 years in the Upper Columbia River. Tribal biologists have confirmed that Chinook salmon are spawning in the Upper Columbia River system in Washington State for the first time in 80 years. Discovery of 36 reds, where a female salmon deposits her eggs, along a prime 8-mile spawning stretch of a tributary of the Columbia River called the Sanpoil River, confirmed the Colville tribe's suspicions, and it's the culmination of decades of dreaming and hard years of work, where one can hear, in the words of Crystal Connett, a Colville tribal member of the Arrow Lakes and Sanpoil bands, when she spoke to L.A. Frankovich at Spokesman. I was shocked at first, but I was just overcome with complete joy. So that's just one news article of many that can be found at goodnewsnetwork.org. And maybe that's a place that we need to go from time to time, Rob, so that we can bring some good news, because normally what we do is we talk about things that aren't so good, and you know, maybe this is something we need to do, Rob.
Well, Alan, there are good things going on, and I think we will start doing that, and we'll talk about some positive things as far as business goes. And, you know, one of the positive things as far as business goes is, why don't you tell our listeners about a big clearance sale you guys are going to be starting here real soon?
Well, thanks for the opportunity. You know, we have some inventory. Some of it is excess inventory as a result of the pandemic. And at Allen Shoes, we're going to be featuring a sale that's going to start this week, and some extra discounts on some of our clearance goods. And we're happy to offer them to our customers and the general public and people that hopefully will become customers. And we've got four locations in Tucson, and you'll find us at allenshoes.com. And there's a where to find us location at a link at the bottom. You'll see each of our locations. And we appreciate all the business we can get. And thanks for the opportunity, Rob.
Absolutely, Alan. And, you know, the weather's nice, so people get out there and walk and get yourselves a nice pair of walking shoes on sale or whatever you might need. It's a perfect time. This weather's been absolutely fantastic, Alan. We couldn't ask for better weather. Unfortunately, we don't have a lot of things going on like we did in the past, but we can at least enjoy it. So get out there, folks. Do a little walking. Enjoy yourself. Burn off a little stress. You'll feel a lot better.
Last week, we introduced a new segment to our show, which we call What Were They Thinking? Today, instead of our Putts of the Week segment, I just thought that we would compile all these numerous stories. We pulled up several of them, and we come across them. Rob and I share them with each other during the week. And our first one is a story about a Catholic priest at the Capitol protest. Rob?
Alan, a Catholic priest from Nebraska who boasted about performing an exorcism at the U.S. Capitol during the January 6th MAGA riots is facing calls to be defrocked. Video showed the Reverend David Fulton speaking to a filmmaker, Eddie Becker, about how he performed the exorcism on a demon named Baphomet, who he said is dissolving the country as he stood in a sea of President Donald Trump supporters. Fulton, who is wearing a clerical collar, identifies himself as a Roman Catholic from Nebraska and holds up a book entitled Minor Exorcisms and Deliverance Prayers in Latin and in English. Got this going, he says, pointing to the book. Got these exorcism prayers going. These priests, they're using them. The priest went on to explain how he carried out the exorcism, saying, we'll see what the effect it had. The video was exposed in an article by the Omaha World Herald, which reported that parishioners are now demanding that Fulton be stripped of his priestly title over his involvement in the insurrection.
Well, I get to say at this point, and after each one of these, I'm going to try to find a different way to say, what was he thinking?
Wow. You know, it's pretty interesting, but, you know, everybody's got their own thing.
Here's the next one. The second article we pulled up had to do with Bernie Sanders' outfit at the inauguration, and he has gotten these images have lots of publicity. I think they've been a lot of fun. But let's talk about his outfit, Rob.
Well, within hours of President Joe Biden's inauguration, the Internet was consumed by images of Senator Sanders sitting stone-faced, bundled against the cold in a parka and colorful mittens. The meme turned into a fundraising bonanza for nonprofits and a symbol, well, one person at least, a public school teacher in San Francisco named Ingrid Sayer Ochi, who wrote an op-ed for the San Francisco Chronicle that appeared last week, quickly went viral. Her objection was to the privilege, white privilege, male privilege, and class privilege symbolized by Sanders' choice of a relatively casual Burton snowboarding jacket and repurposed wool mittens. Sayer Ochi addressed the topic with her students, who she said were also upset by what they saw as the implicit message being delivered by his choice of outerwear. What did they see? They saw a white man in a puffy jacket and huge mittens, distant not only in his social distancing, but in his demeanor and attire, she said. What did I see? What did I think my students should see? A wealthy, incredibly well-educated and privileged white man showing up for perhaps the most important ritual of the decade in a puffy jacket and huge mittens.
You know, it was cold that day, I'm sure. I think they're reading too much into that particular one. What are they thinking?
I mean, cold, Senator Sanders is not a young man, Alan, and I would think he wants to make sure he doesn't get sick. So, yeah, everybody interprets things differently, I suppose.
Let's look at the next article, or listen to the next article, and it's about a man and his choice of what to eat.
Mike Jack has that burning desire, Alan. Jack set a Guinness World Record speed mark by eating three Carolina Reaper peppers, the world's hottest chili pepper, in 9.72 seconds. Guinness noted that in their video. He winced in pain, retched, and required a bucket. It feels so good, but it hurts so bad, he said. The Smokin' Ed's Carolina Reaper packs an average of 1.6 million Scoville heat units, according to Guinness, and up to more than 2 million, according to other sources. The Carolina Reaper is about 200 times hotter than the relatively pedestrian jalapeno. So, this guy, wow.
You know, on July 4th, every once in a while, on July 4th, I catch wind of that Nathan's Hot Dog Eating Contest. It's
right,
July
4th,
right?
Right.
And, you know, my wife and I discuss it. We don't understand how this sport, you know, they can call it a sport. We just don't get it. We think this is pretty disgusting. And if you watch them eat, it's like, you know, not pleasant, okay? I mean, we love Nathan's Hot Dog, by the way. One or two or three if we were really hungry, but 46 and
10 minutes?
Seconds or yeah. Or a minute or whatever it is, it's a little off-putting to me. I don't know. What are they thinking with all this gross eating stuff?
It's pretty interesting. Made for TV, Alan.
I guess so. So here's the next article. Missouri lawmaker indicted for allegedly selling fake stem cell treatments. Can you give us a little bit of more information on that one?
A Missouri state representative was charged in a 20-count indictment that alleged she fraudulently administered treatments, including for COVID-19, that falsely claimed to have stem cells. The clinic offered its patients amniotic fluid that claimed to have stem cells, but in fact was acellular without stem cells. After she made false claims on a Springfield television station in April that stem cells could treat COVID-19, an investigation was launched. And on Facebook, the woman claimed her clinic's amazing treatment stands to provide a potential cure for COVID-19 patients that is safe and natural. She self-surrendered on her indictment and was released following an initial appearance in federal court. Gosh, Alan, a lot of people take advantage of people during these kinds of times.
You know, I don't know if we're going to get through all of them. We're going to try one more here, and it has to do with Morgan Wallen, who is a very popular, up until last week, country music radio personality.
Yeah, Morgan Wallen, whose Dangerous album has remained on top of the Billboard chart for the last 3 weeks, said in a statement he's embarrassed and sorry for using a racial slur. I used an unacceptable and inappropriate racial slur that I wish I could take back, he said in a statement. There are no excuses to this use of language ever. I want to sincerely apologize for using the word. I promise to do better. But his language has pushed Cumulus Media, which controls more than 400 radio stations in the U.S., to pull off his music. Cumulus Media's executive vice president of programming sent an email to their program directors regarding them to the directive. Team, unfortunately, country music star Morgan Wallen was captured on video using a racial slur. We are pulling his music from our air lists. And Alan, you know what's really kind of troubling is his album has sold four times more albums in this last week than it ever did before after this news came out.
Wow. Listen, everyone deserves to make an apology and to be forgiven a little bit. I think maybe there's a little overkill on him, and maybe some of his people are just buying up his albums before they can't anymore. How much time do we have left, Rob?
Well, we're under a minute, Alan, so I think it's time for us to say goodbye to our listening audience for the week.
Catch us on the internet at btobtucson.com. That's btobtucson.com. If you want to sponsor our show, please call Rob at Davidson Advertising at 629-9555. If you're a retailer or restaurant owner, any business that struggled in the last few months, we think Back to Business with Rob and Alan is your show. This has been Alan McCloskey.
And Rob Davidson. Have a great week, everyone. Stay well.